Welcome to Muffliato, a Harry Potter podcast where we fill your ears to prevent you from hearing nearby conversations. I'm Josh.
And I'm Blake, and today Lupin gives us a lesson on his life as we continue our journey through Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban and come now to the 18th chapter, Moony, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs. Now, this chapter's great. Much as it looks like an info dump with Lupin just, you know, talking to us, Josh, it's quite fun that we get a bit of his backstory as well as some of these marauders.
Yeah, no, this is one of the rare chapters where it's almost like a bottle episode in a TV series, right? Everybody is in the one room, no one goes anywhere, and with the exception of a few flashbacks, it is Lupin telling us what has happened in the past.
Yeah, that's right. So what is that you said bottle episode?
So let me
is that like a term, because I feel like I might have seen that before on, you know, when, I don't know if it's when TV shows are trying to save money or they've got biggest time schedules.
So it's a TV show that's really cheap to produce, and it's restricted in its scope because they don't use extra sets, they don't use extra characters. Classic example of one of them is the Community episode where they make fun of bottle episodes, and they're all in the study room the entire episode, and it's just the six of them.
I do love that, and how great for a show like Community to kind of do it on the nose, right? Like just be like,
exactly.
we're kind of parodying this whilst doing it. Boy, I do love those paintball episodes.
the opposite of a bottle episode would be that. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They clearly were maybe doing a bottle episode so that they were allowed to spend a bit more on the budget when it came to the actual paintball episodes. So if any of you guys are Community fans out there, you'll know how fun those paintball episodes are, especially the first few. But coming back to this, we do get that wonderful history, and I think we should just jump into that chapter summary, Josh, so we know what's kind of taken place.
The trio are shocked by the news that Scabbers real Peter Pettigrew. After another attempt to seize the rat, Lupin convinces Sirius that Harry must understand everything before he kills Pettigrew. Lupin admits that everyone, including himself, was fooled by Peter, but that the Marauder's map had convinced him that he was still alive. Hermione reasons that the story cannot be true because Peter is not listed as one of the seven registered animagi. Lupin reveals that during his time as a student, there were three students who managed to perform that magic, all of which was done in secret. Ron sees a door open mysteriously and comments that the shack really is haunted. Lupin reveals the backstory behind the shack, saying that it was never haunted, but it was where he went as a young werewolf to transform and protect the other students. The screams the villagers heard were his, and that Dumbledore kept the rumors alive. In order to be with him during his transformations, James and Sirius and Peter became animagi. Once transformed, the four of them could safely roam the grounds and Forbidden Forest together. Lupin concedes that he regrets deceiving Dumbledore, especially now when he believes Sirius was using his animagus form to enter the castle. He even admits that Snape was partially right about him and that he couldn't be trusted completely concerning Black. Once, he reveals, while they were students, Sirius nearly led Snape to a fully transformed Lupin, but James's intervention was the only thing that saved him. Harry interjects, saying, "That must be why Snape hates Lupin." Suddenly, behind Remus, Severus Snape pulls off the invisibility cloak and replies, "That's right."
I feel like this is like the best cliffhanger or the best chapter ending of this book is that, like, because this is like a three chapter thing, right? Like where these three chapters, starting with the last chapter we covered, this one being in the middle and the next one to follow being the end, it's sort of, they go together quite well. This is such a good chapter ending that makes you just, you've got to just start that next chapter so you understand what Snape is, you know, what's he going to do.
Yeah, I loved it, even how I was reading through it and the comment was made about Ron noticing the door open. I thought, that's what's happening. And it's very good.
Made me think of that time in the movie, at least, where, you know, it's very visual, where they're upstairs in, I think, the Three Broomsticks, and Harry hears his name be mentioned by the Minister of Magic and Sirius Black, and he goes up in his invisibility cloak and opens the door, kind of sneaks in to where McGonagall, the minister, and I think Madame Rosmerta are talking about Sirius Black being Harry's godfather. And obviously that scene is different than in the book, but in the movie, it just made me think that sort of maybe where they borrowed it from, where that, like, it's seen as a door just that's opening, and it's like, oh, better shut that kind of thing. But really, now you're kind of looking over your shoulder, or whenever a door opens and no one walks through, you're like, is there someone under an invisibility cloak in here? But yes, clearly. Severus Snape comes in, and at the very that perfect moment, just opens up. That's right, and it's just like, oh,
so good.
So amazing. But we do see obviously Snape at the very end come in, and we'll get more of Snape in that next chapter. But this chapter is very much about trying to convince the trio that they're not bonkers and they're not crazy.
Yes. Yeah, no, exactly. And really, you know, Lupin makes the case that this is actually what must be done so that Harry understands why they want to kill Pettigrew, right?
Mm.
Yeah, and they really haven't gotten through the whole explanation, right? All they've done is get through their time at school. There's so much more to come about what actually happens with, you know, the night that Lily and James died.
Yeah. And so we'll see in that next chapter that that Harry takes it into his own hands, or at least in his wand there, and gets Snape out of the picture so that they can continue their story. But for key themes as we see through this, and being a flashback, it seems like Lupin is talking a lot about him and his old school friends.
Yeah, we do see that theme of friendship and betrayal, friendship among the four marauders. And then Lupin really does start to feel, I think, some significant guilt in this chapter, that not only was it extremely dangerous while they were at Hogwarts, but that his refusal to tell Dumbledore that Sirius was an Animagus was also putting students at risk now. And so there's that twofold element of friendship, yes, but also betrayal of Dumbledore's trust.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think any scene or any kind of flashback where we actually get a little bit more of Harry's kind of history of his dad's history, hanging out with his mates and stuff, especially as Sirius in these next couple books becomes a bit more part of Harry's life, right? I think that's quite cool. It's cool to see a bit of the background start to open up, especially about Snape, because Harry's essentially going to be, you know, sitting in classrooms with Snape, and you know, understanding a little bit more about some of this backstory is quite good for Harry, and great for us as readers, because, you know, we learn a little bit more about the world itself and about Harry's kind of parents, and not so much Lily, but Harry's dad himself, as well as these other three kind of scallywags that he ran around with and did a lot of things. But yeah, we get that kind of regret and sadness that Remus feels about how he could have endangered multiple people. Well, he did endanger multiple people by running around and, you know, having to be sort of controlled by these other friends of his.
Like, the question that I have is are we positive that Dumbledore didn't know?
I feel like if
it is true that that Dumbledore didn't know, and I think there's a significant chance that it is true. You know, I think he probably would have acted differently if he would have known. But if we say that he didn't know, how impressive is that? I mean, Dumbledore knows pretty much everything that's going on.
Yeah, it goes to show how sneaky they were. And I think, you know, a lot of that, they would have had great sneaking abilities probably before they became Animagi. But I feel like when they did, and since they did it under the radar, I think maybe Dumbledore might not have considered that option, considering, you know, he seems like a man who would consider pretty much everything. I just feel like maybe that one flew under the radar and he wasn't so much aware of that. I just feel like there should have been more closer watch on him. I don't know. I guess they didn't have cameras. They couldn't put cameras up in the Shrieking Shack to watch over Lupin and be like, why is the dog rat, hanging around? But
what a liability that magic ruins technology, hey?
Yes. That is both the worst thing, but also the best thing that Rowling did, I feel like, to kind of stop so many plot holes from kind of coming into play. I mean, there's also that sort of the gun theory, right? Not so much technology, whether that would actually be a better way, rather than Avada Kedavra, but who knows, maybe that's another bonus episode another time.
But again, the Avada Kedavra curse leaves no trace, right?
That is true.
Bullets, you know, you know exactly what gun they're fired from.
Yeah.
A lot more forensic evidence.
But I mean, by the deduction of that, they can, the magical community can work out that it's the Avada Kedavra curse pretty straight away. If you're if you're targeting, obviously, it depends on who you're targeting. But yeah, it gets a bit wild. But as we've mentioned, this chapter is Remus Lupin is kind of the star of this chapter.
He's our storyteller.
He's the storyteller. And so when we come into character development, we get, you know, some new information. And I think I mentioned it in the past before and linked to it in the show notes about Lupin himself and kind of a bit of the backstory of his parents and who they were. So they were Lyle and Hope. I was his dad and mom. And Lyle worked in the Ministry of Magic. We don't go that deep into, you know, within this chapter. They're not kind of, it's not said why he was bitten by a werewolf as a small boy. But ultimately, when we do a bit of digging in some of that kind of Wizarding World material, we find out that Lyle actually was a very big, proponent for kind of, you know, werewolves just all need to die. And, you know, they just aren't even worth like kind of any time. They're not worth living. Greyback, who was at the ministry, actually overheard that conversation and clearly was angered by it, went back to his pack of other werewolves. And then that's why they thought, what better way, what crueler way to punish the man than to bite his son? And and so that's why Greyback bit Remus Lupin. So we obviously don't get all of that information, but we do see that he's bitten as a small boy, and that was sort of devastating for his parents.
Yeah, wow, no kidding. That's interesting. Like, I never heard that. And did you say you're going to link that article?
Yeah. So we'll if we don't link it, you can find it by searching. I think within werewolves itself, it might actually, or a little bit more background information on Lupin. But it's very easy to find the sort of, you know, pages that link to Lyle, and I don't think much is mentioned about his mother. But after that, Lyle sort of started opening up about werewolves, actually seeing them more as people, as you can imagine, with your son becoming a werewolf and being like, hey, there are werewolves out there this is not what they want, you know. And so
the story had a happy ending. It was all worth it.
Yeah, you know.
Not at all.
Oh, yeah.
Poor Lupin, you know.
Yeah, so
in order to get his dad to open his mind slightly, the poor kid had to be bit by a werewolf.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure it was a great family before that, and obviously they might have struggled after that with dealing with this, but you know, that's another story, another kind of intellectual property that could be made into a TV show or a story in about 20 years. Who knows where the
wizard is. Yeah, instead of like a serial killer type crime series, you could have the stories of Greyback.
Oh, wow. That would be
Greyback Files or something.
I feel like that would be Greyback Files. That would be very dark indeed.
Paw and Order.
I'm just leaving that silence in there, Josh, in the podcast there. I'm hoping that, you know, their podcast apps don't cut out too much silence, because if they do, well, I just want them to know that there was a bit of silence. Maybe some tumbleweed was sort of, you know, rolling by, or what's, is it crickets chirping?
Exactly.
That's the other one. But from Remus, and he tells us about his friends, right, back in school, and James Potter, Sirius Black, and Peter Pettigrew. But, you know, we get a little bit of information on James Potter and Sirius Black in regards to them actually becoming Animagi, and that's because they're noted here by Lupin as the cleverest students in the school, which is pretty impressive. Whether that was true, whether that was coming from, you know, the eyes of one of their friends who was impressed by them, who was just thankful that they, you know, invited him into that friendship. But I definitely think they were, you know, regardless of what it was, they were clever students to have helped Peter Pettigrew, obviously, to become Animagi. It's a difficult process, which we'll talk about later when we look at world building. But it's a little cool insight that, hey, you know, Harry's dad, he was great at Quidditch, but he also was a very smart student.
Yeah, and I think we can probably see the difference between Sirius and James and someone like Hermione in that when it comes to, you know, their friends, and when it comes to helping their friends and devising this plot, you know, Sirius and James are able to channel all of their mental energies and faculties to accomplish this and use their incredible talent. I don't get the sense that they were studying on the weekends in order to, you know, devote that kind of level of workload all the time, right? Like they had a very specific purpose. And I think I always got the feeling that, you know, these were students who, if they applied themselves all the time, would have been legendary students, but instead chose to be legendary pranksters and have a great time. Yeah.
Josh, if you were their teacher and you were writing their report card, you know, it would be that last line that is, I feel like, quite common in a report card of a student, right? It's like, you know, they just need to apply themselves a bit more. So that would be on James Potter and Sirius Black's bottom of their report cards for Hogwarts. But aside from them, Severus Snape, obviously we learn of that prank, right? It was played on him, which was a very kind of very nasty prank. Like that's pretty cruel to almost understand the suffering that their friend Lupin has gone through, and then to think that was funny to put on to, you know, somebody else, even someone that they despised like Snape. A little bit cruel, a little bit ruthless, maybe not well thought out.
Yeah. Well, and just the potential of things going wrong is so high, right? Something truly terrible could have happened very easily.
Yeah, so it's just a small thing about Severus Snape, but we, you know, that we understand his resentment against Lupin, right? Thinking that he was in on it, which I don't think he would have been in on anything of the sort for anybody, right? Because he knows the suffering that takes place, and by all means, he wouldn't want to go too far and not just bite, but to fully kill someone. That would be horrible. So. You know, thankfully he hasn't done that. But world building, Josh, what do we see when we look at that?
Yeah, so for the world building, we do get more of an insight into the Marauder's map. Obviously, this has been an item that we've been familiar with for the whole story, for the whole book. I mean, and yet in this chapter, it's revealed that the Marauder's map is really the hero behind revealing who Peter Pettigrew really was.
They were able to kind of create that quite decently. Like nobody has the time to explore so much of Hogwarts, right, as they did, because they were able to sneak out as animals and explore the outer grounds, explore, you know, like the Weasleys, I'm sure, would have done a great job within Hogwarts themselves.
Yes,
but I feel like all the passageways, you know, to and from Hogwarts, I think that was so clever that they were, you know, that was the, I guess, the tool that eventually led to the Weasleys learning all of that information themselves, was this Marauder's map that clearly got confiscated and wound up in Filch's office there under the filing cabinet labeled like dangerous or very dangerous or whatever, which who could stop Fred and George from jumping into that. So yeah, Marauder's map, we get that sort of little detail about the Animagi registration that clearly takes place in the sort of the British wizarding world, the Ministry of Magic in Britain. I'm assuming when they say 7 registered Animagi this century, that kind of 20th century, that would be within, I feel like, the British wizarding community, because it's like different countries would have different registrations. But pretty crazy how it's only 7, right? Clearly it is a difficult progress.
I've got two comments on that. One, it seems, you know, incredibly impressive that, you know, McGonagall is one of those 7. Very cool.
Yes.
But then the other thing is, if 3 students, one of whom was apparently not that gifted, were able to do it at Hogwarts, like, do people just not have a great desire to be anime guy? Like, I feel like even at, like, allow James and Sirius to be as impressive as you want them to be, there are other wizards who gain that level of competence when they're adults. Is it just not maybe that desired? I'm not quite sure.
Yeah,
or
like
this is my other question.
Yeah.
Or are there just tons of unregistered ones?
That's a good point. It almost pays to be more registered, although maybe the, you know, for them, young and foolhardy they were, they didn't care about the consequences. But maybe the consequences, which is very briefly mentioned by Lupin, were very, you know, horrible. Maybe that puts off a lot of adults from actually even attempting it, as well as I feel like it is a long process.
Yes.
You know, they were finally, I think it mentions Lupin's, you know, Lupin said, I think they were finally able to achieve it in a certain year. And so it's like, oh, wow, I think that's, clearly it shows that it's a big process. It's a dangerous process. And I think maybe only a bunch of teenage boys who were, you know, doing this for a friend could clearly do it. But I am surprised that they were able somehow to teach or somehow bring along, Peter Pettigrew to along the ride. It just seems a little bit tricky as well. But yeah, so that's quite a cool thing. You know, you think, who are those other animagi? Where do they work? And do they work for the ministry? And lastly, part of world building, the Whomping Willow, we finally get, a better history of that and why it was planted. It wasn't just planted at the same time that Lupin was at school, as was previously mentioned. It was planted for him as a way to kind of protect the entrance to his lovely, humble abode or his, monthly retreat, let's say. And it's hard to describe the Shrieking Shack that way, but hey, who knows? Maybe it was a little bit nicer than it is today back when Lupin was there, although probably would have got a bit scratched up. But yeah, so Whomping Willow, we get a little bit more information regarding that. And then we move into literary devices, Josh, in which we've discussed a few of these before, but what things do we see?
Yeah, well, I think one of the main things we see, Blake, and this is something that you've mentioned already, is that these three chapters really do work together to create great cliffhangers at the end of each one. And this one, I think you're right, is perhaps the greatest. When Snape appears, that cliffhanger is just fantastic. But, cat, rat, dog, did I get that order right?
Yeah, I think so. Cat, rat, and dog.
Yes, I did. Yeah, okay. Yeah, nice. I'm always unsure about that. Cat, rat, and dog, Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs. And then finally, the Servant of Lord Voldemort. Those three chapters really do work seamlessly. But the chapter breaks, again, this is the literary device. The chapter breaks are intentional, right? If you put the chapter breaks at different points, all of a sudden you aren't as spurred on to read on to the next chapter. So that's really intentional there. And then, like you said as well, there are times in these books, especially oftentimes when it comes to things that are intensely magical that probably aren't as easily accessible for us, the reader, but this time something historical becomes one of a use of exposition. And Rowling does that really well in this chapter, telling it through a story rather than some other means of them finding that out.
Definitely. And so I feel like that's a great middle to this three-part chapter almost. This wonderful scene in the actual Shrieking Shack. And it's going to get even better next chapter as they leave the Shrieking Shack and things just go crazy from there and really picks up the speed, it picks up the pace. And before you know it, we're going to be at the end of this book. And who knows what's going to happen to Sirius Black? Well, we probably all know what's going to happen. Anyway, significance wise, you know, we obviously get that history of James and Sirius, Lupin and Peter's school life. I think that's a fun one. It's big. It gives us a bit of that back history. We obviously get within that, you know, Lupin's history of being a werewolf. And I think that's obviously vital, especially in these chapters. And we see with this kind of cliffhanger that our trio, our protagonists are still confused. And so I think that will be that's going to be answered in the next chapter. But as for now, they're very, very confused.
Very confused indeed.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you're an Apple user, don't forget to leave a rating and review. Your support helps keep the magic alive. You can send us questions on our Instagram or email muffliatopodcast@gmail.com or use the form on our website at www.muffliatopodcast.com. To continue the adventure, join us next time as we discuss the 19th chapter of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, The Servant of Lord Voldemort.